essentially, where we left off, we've basically seen that it seems halacha l'maisa and most of the Rishonim hold that Ksuba is drabanan. But we saw that it's not 100% clear. It is a machlokas in the Gemara that comes up a number of times. And it is a machlokas Rishonim. Most prominently among those who maintain that Ksuba is daraisa is Rabbeinu Tam and maybe other Balei HaTosfos in the Tosfos on Daf Yud. And that the truth is, it's probably some combination of both, as we saw, that on some level, the Torah is certainly at least acknowledging the concept of Ksuba, when the Torah says, Kesef Yishkol Kemor HaBesulos, and the Gemara makes reference to that as the source for Ksuba Daraisa, if it is Daraisa. It seems to be that on some level, there is a basic core agreement here, that there's something existing in HaTorah, that either there was a practice, maybe even a practice all over the world, not just among the Jewish people, to give some kind of dowry to the wife and to the wife's family, and that whether or not the Torah specifically commands it as a mitzvah, as a chiyuv, that maybe we have some debate to what extent is the value pre-established, or is that an institution midrabanan. That's also a subject of debate, but I think there's some basic consensus that there's a concept of ksuva on a level of min haTorah, and that how that plays out, okay, we could argue, is the whole thing deraisa, is the whole thing derabanan, just coming off of a concept deraisa. That's really where our machlokas lies, but it's not such a substantial machlokas. There are nafkaminas, there certainly are differences. And that's a lot of what we'll see, that in terms of the basic rules of how the Rabbanans are applied, in terms of the value of money, in terms of who has the default Ne'amanas, these are important nafkaminas. I don't mean to downplay that. But conceptually, it seems like we basically have really somewhat of common ground, that we're talking about a concept that existed, and maybe existed as some kind of a chiyuv, and details which reflect much rabbinic input. And we pose the question in general that we should try to keep in mind when we talk about the idea of ksuba being drabanan. So what exactly does that mean to say it's drabanan? So we're familiar with using the concept of drabanans when we talk about a siyag, when we talk about a safeguard. So this is something that protects us from doing averus. But that's not the only model of drabanans that we have. We also have drabanans which are not necessarily a gzeira per se, but they're there to kind of flesh out the Torah's vision of whatever concept we're talking about. So here, when we talk about ksuba, so what phrase do you find in the Gemara as the reason for the ksuba being there, especially when it's phrased as a takanas chazal? What does the Gemara tell us? Why did chazal put it there? Akiva? Sorry? Well, that's the language the Gemara uses? So that's how you want to categorize it. Which might be true. But what's the phrase the Gemara about? Are you?
I don't remember the phrase exactly, but to make it harder for the husband to divorce his wife.
See, that's actually, you know, you might be already interpreting it the way you translate it. That might be correct, right? So you say to make it harder, right? So the truth is, so the Gemara says, Shalom Tehe Kala Be'enav, not Kala in the sense with the Chaf. We want her to be a Kala. We don't want it to be Kala with a Kuf. We don't want it to be too easy. So you said hard. So it's a good question if that's what it means. It might mean that. Right, so, or it could mean, well, how else do we use the word kal? As light. Right? It shouldn't be a small matter, meaning maybe he shouldn't divorce her casually. I think that actually that ambiguity might be significant. Does the idea mean, if the Gemara tells us that Chazal instituted ksuba, so it shouldn't be kal ve'enav, it shouldn't be light, it shouldn't be easy in his mind to divorce her, so does that mean we want to make it harder, stam, so it's less likely to happen? Or does that mean something else? How would you understand that? Is that a gzera? What is that? What does that language mean? And is that a way of saying there's some type of iser? Like there's an iser daraisa, and the Torah now tells us don't do this, so Chazal say don't do that either because it might come to this, like we normally see by drabanans? Or is this a different kind of concept? What is it? What's the rabbinic interest? What's Chazal's interest in saying shalot tehe kala be'enav l'hotzi? How do you understand that? Any thoughts about that? What does that mean? Are you?
I mean, it seems kind of to be a siyuk.
Okay.
Because it's trying to perhaps prevent him from easily divorcing women, like a serial marrier.
Serial marrier, serial divorcer. Right? He doesn't actually have to be a serial divorcer to be a serial marrier, Minatora. Because Minatora
he can marry more than one wife at a time, so he could be a serial marrier without divorcing any wives. But maybe we don't want him to be a serial divorcer. But is that an isser? Is there a Torah prohibition against doing that? So we keep up first and Adam.
I mean, to pull the old Jewish trick and answer
question. Yes, that's acceptable.
Is there a social problem that Chazals are answering to of people divorcing their wives for a very little reason? Or is it something that they've noticed, or is it something that they're concerned about that has happened? Is it, were they responding to a societal trend when they made this takana, or were they just shoring up an existing?
So that's itself. You're basically rephrasing the question, or you're extending the question back, or you're rephrasing the question. You're answering by rephrasing the question. The Jewish part we understood.
I'm not quite sure.
Right. Okay. So I'm throwing back. That's a double Judaism, right? So I'm throwing the question back at you in terms of your question that you answered with the question. So essentially, right. Everybody's Jewish here. So basically, I should finally acknowledge that. But basically, essentially, when you say a social problem, it doesn't seem like. I think it might be a social problem, but not like something new that all of a sudden surfaced. So they decided they have to make a policy that there was a rash of serial divorces, but it seems to be this is more of an ongoing type of social reality that they were addressing. So what does that mean, Adam?
I mean, it's a little different because it can't be Kala in his eyes because he has nothing to lose. She's less valuable if they get divorced.
Okay.
So it's like a casual fling. They get married, you know, she's a bacillus when they get married. She's not afterwards. She's worth less. What does nothing happen to him?
Okay, so now maybe what you're saying then, so then maybe it is somewhat of a chizik of an isser, so to speak. Right? Theoretically, I don't know if you're getting it. But, sorry?
I'll listen and see.
Okay, so tell me if this is what you said. Find out if this is what you said. Right, that we saw last week that, at least according to the Rambam, other Rishonim don't necessarily see it this way, but at least according to the Rambam, there's an isser deraisa of Kedesha that's going to apply whenever a man and a woman want to have a physical relationship without the benefit of marriage. So, therefore, the chiyuv, kiddushin, which he understands as a mitzvah, we saw comes to counter that. So he phrases as a losa, say also, right, that the relationship should not be casual, the relationship should have commitment beforehand. So we've been seeing that it seems that the ksuba, whether it's the raisa, the rabban, and all the elements that come along with it, seem to contribute to that picture, certainly within the Rambam. And that the idea is that not only should it be formal, it should be very formal. It should have a whole host of responsibilities that come along with it. So ksuba could be filling out that picture, but you could also, maybe even in that sense, phrase it as a protection for lo sase. But if lo sase, maybe not in the sense of that you're going to violate a lo sase, but that the spirit of lo sase is coming closer and closer. But if the Torah says shouldn't have a kedesha, and that means, practically speaking, you should not be engaged in essentially a casual, non-committed relationship. So then everything that makes it more committed and more formal then pushes us farther away from what the Torah doesn't want. So maybe in that sense, it's almost like a siyag, essentially, or it's something close to a siyag, that they have to formulate it a little more carefully. Maybe it's not about, we're afraid you're going to do the aveira, but that it'll just be too close to what the Torah said not to do, and that's itself a problem. So you could phrase it like that, which I don't know if that's what you were
going to. No, I meant it more along the lines of it shouldn't be light in his eyes that, okay, we got married and I'm going to divorce you. But then, you know, he's stuck, I guess they get divorced and he can, so to speak, it doesn't really have a chisar in him, so to speak, but her, like, she's not, if she wants to get remarried, she's not going to be able to take as much as she would have. So the ksuba is a kind of a measure to make it more difficult so he can sit in hard to pay and all of these things, and so she's not like just whatever kind of thrown under the bus.
Oh, okay, so that's all a very valid concern, and that's all very understandable and very possible as a reason, but then it just goes back to our question though. So are you saying it's not really a siyag type of drabana? It's a drabana in a different sense. It's a drabana like you find, for example, if you learn the middle of Maseches Gittin, then you find that there are all kinds of takanas that replace tikkun olam. Sometimes Chazal get involved because the world needs certain mechanisms in order to function better, and it's not going to function so well if husbands can divorce their wives casually.
Yeah,
and therefore, so it's not so much the siyag, and therefore the Rabbana that we're talking about, of Ksuba, is
more of a social corrective than a siag, and those exist.
What do you think? You're leading back to the fact that you either translate kala as easy or like more.
A little bit. I mean, I think that difference is interesting. You know, the fact that the question is, do we mean that we don't want it to be easy and therefore it's to keep you from falling into a trap, kind of siag kind of language? Or are we saying that she should have stature, she should have weight, right? You know, like we talk about kibbut ha'aim, and kibbut comes from the language of kabed, right? That you give people stature, so you want the husband to be mechabed his wife as opposed to treating her as kal.
In terms of the seriousness of the relationship.
Right. So yeah. The relationship should be weighty, it shouldn't be light. So this might mean that it shouldn't be an easy matter for him, it shouldn't be a light matter for him to say, oh, whatever, I married her, easy come, easy go, hop down to Reno and get a quickie divorce. That shouldn't be the mentality, but if that's the case, so we're still not 100% clear on whether it is a siag type, and I'm not expecting to be clear in the next few minutes. I think this is a question just to keep in mind in general.
That wouldn't be the distinction, no?
Right, you know, and I think the question is, I mean, that translation would play into it a little bit. 100%, but it would play into it a little bit. And again, I'm not necessarily looking for an answer right now so much, it's just a question to keep in mind as we see some of the din in here. I think this is part of it. And also, just to maybe flesh out a little bit more what Adam thought he was saying, and he found that he wasn't saying, the question about it being a siag type of understanding. So it's also, you know, it's funny to say it's a siag, because normally a siag is a lo sase, right? The Torah says don't do A, and Chazal say don't do B. So normally, that's what a siag is, normally a lo sase. So ksupas clearly seems to manifest itself like a mitzvah sase. Now, is that consistent with the model of a siag? Yes, because especially the way the Rambam actually says it, as we discussed last week, in Sefer HaMitzvos, that ksupa could really be a lo sase, essentially, right? That he seemed to phrase that the Yisr Kadesha, as I will take a second, that the Yisr Kadesha is phrased as not to be boel without Kedusha Nuksuba, that essentially the Ksuba is maybe not so much of a positive commandment, a positive din, as it is a negative, that one should not be in a marriage without it. So it saves you from the Isser of a prohibited state of marriage, and we'll talk in a few minutes about what exactly it is we're prohibiting. But that, in that sense, we could see this whole thing as a negative, see the whole thing as a siag, and focus on the Yisr Kadesha, and that's essentially what Ksuba is coming to address, a siag for the Yisr Kadesha, even if it's somewhat of an atypical siag. So Ari was waiting for a while, then Kiva.
Is it too far of a stretch to say that it's a siag to make sure that these women don't become divorcees and then wind up marrying Klein?
Yeah, I think so, no offense, because the question is why would that be more likely to happen this time? Because we want to be memayit in divorcees so that there are fewer shown for the Kohanim. So that would be pretty far stretch, I think. In general, there is a relationship to the ksuba in that concept. We'll talk about it a little bit, but to say it's all formulated for that, I think it's hard to say. I think that if we want to say it's yeah, it probably would be within the picture of Kadesha, that the idea is that the Kadesha idea we shouldn't have a casual relationship. And Ksuba will come to go even farther to solidify that. Just also flesh that a little bit more, and I'll take this question in a second. So one general ambiguity, and this is a big machlokas in general, is you know we have a concept in halacha of acherim. We're learning Daf Yomi, so the use of Daf Yomi was about clear a little more of a narrow sense. People who misbehave and society has an excommunication on them, a cherub on them. But we have, that's an individualized cherub that Gemara was talking about recent Daf Yomi in Hoy Kut, and anybody who's holding in that. So there the Gemara was talking about, it's an individual does something wrong, and he's put in Shams, he's put in Nidui, all kind of terminology. But we have broader charamim. That there are cases where it's not about any one individual, but Chazal, or usually the early Rishonim, the Kadmonim, Rabbeinu Gershon, made a Cherub. And we know there are certain things that they're including in this band. So it's a big machlokus in many areas of halacha. How much do you read in to a Cherub? So if you know something is prohibited because of this communal sanction, because of a Cherub, so should you infer from there that there is no Isser Doraisa, that it's mutter, and we needed a cherem in order to
stop it, if this was something that was a societal problem, the Torah didn't cover it. So Rabbeinu Gershom, whoever, Kadmonim, came and decided to address it with a new concept? Or should we say that, no, it doesn't mean that this was mutter beforehand. It might, and this, it might be one or the other, it might be somewhere in between. But maybe it means that this is behavior that was always us. The Torah did prohibit this. But there was a problem. People weren't paying attention to it. People were not being careful. And it was a societal issue. So therefore, the rabbis had a need to make a big social push about it. So if the rabbi gets up and says, we're going to make a big movement to stop talking in shul, doesn't mean that until he said that talking in shul was mutter. It means that talking in shul has become a problem, so it's become the behavioral issue, so we have to take a big aggressive step to deal with it. The implication isn't that until he said that it was mutter. So how do you understand the concept of chayrim? This is a big machlokas, and it doesn't have an easy answer, because there are those who argue about all kinds of areas below. Just for example, some of the guys were asking this morning about copyright type issues, about using other people's intellectual property against their will. So there is a chayrim in Sfarim. There's a chayrim in terms of publishing earlier Sfarim of other people and taking their work and printing it as their own. So there are those who argue, okay, that shows you that the Torah didn't forbid this behavior, that there was a need. You know, you weren't going to have a Sfarim industry if people could have their work taken by anyone else, and you want to have Sfarim. So therefore, the Rabbanan felt that there needed to be new iser created so that we could have Sfarim being published. And others will say, no, it doesn't mean that. This was always wrong. But we needed to have it enforced, because otherwise we wouldn't have a Sfarim industry. We needed to make a strong public statement that we actually are going to pursue this. So the chayrim just means that whatever was already a total value is being endorsed by a greater degree of social action. Just throw another example from something I was looking into recently. It's interesting how so even say you shouldn't speak ill of the dead. Right? So as Shapter often points out, that people feel that you can treat anybody any way you want when they're alive, but then as soon as they die, so then cover the face, that becomes important how you treat them. But really it's the other way around, but really cover the chayim is really the acre. And the cover of chayim is so important that it continues even after the person no longer is aware, there is still an obligation of cover that extends. So this comes up in the issue of Lashon Hara. You prohibited from speaking Lashon Hara about people who are no longer alive. So there is a chayrim ha-kadmonim. There is a chayrim from the early Gnolim that one should not be mosi shemra on mason. So it happens to be a machlokas, just to mention, it's interesting to random comments about this from Liyashiv. The Sefer on Brachos. Liyashiv writes that there's an Isser Daraisa to speak Lashon Hara even after people are no longer alive. And the Chayrim just comes and endorses that. And you're back with Kamenetsky in his Sefer on Chumash. He says the opposite. He says, how could it be the Torah tells us about bad things that people in Chumash did? That's because there's no Lashon Hara not alive anymore. He says, ah, there's a Chayrim, okay, there's a Chayrim different level, and that's only about Moti Shemra, it's not about Lashon Hara. But it reflects this general nafokus. When you see a chayrim on something, is that an indication that it wasn't really originally asur, and only because there was, as Kiva put it before, some type of societal problem that the rabbinic leadership felt it had to be addressed? Or is it more than that? It was always asur, and it was still a societal problem, and therefore the Chazal said we have to come and endorse, we have to come and enforce, rather, this Torah value that's already there, and back it up. And it's also possible it's a little bit of both, right? It's also possible that sometimes certain Haramim were coming to reinforce existing Torah values, and some Haramim were coming mechadash and making something new. So why is this relevant to us? Because we know, for example, that one Chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershom is that one cannot divorce his wife Bal Korcha. Right? That one, even though theoretically the Torah, this Rishpasha, puts the power in the hands of the husband to divorce his wife, but we know at least Halacha L'maisa, at least the Rabbanan, so he has to have the permission to do that. He can't just send her away. It has to essentially be, essentially, for all intents and purposes, and practical Halacha, at least the Rabbanan, so how the divorce has to be mutual. Both parties have to agree.
So the question is, so what does that mean when you say that there's a cherem in the Gershon, not to divorce your wife against her will? So does that mean that he made this up, that until he came along, the Torah didn't have a feeling on this? Or was it always wrong? I love them in our Torah to divorce your wife against her will. It was possible, but still wrong, still halakhically wrong. And Rabbeinu Gershom came and made a big deal about this, came and enforced it, so now people paid attention. So that's very relevant to this question, right? There is the idea that the Ksuba is somehow creating an even greater distance between the husband divorcing and the wife's willingness to go along with it, that essentially is the Torah putting up another obstacle, is Chazal, let's say, with the Ksuba, putting up another obstacle here, saying that he cannot divorce her in a way that disregards her wishes. So by putting a lot of monetary power in her hand, by making this something that's going to go along with divorce, so now there's a greater barrier between him and casually divorcing her without her agreeing. So that's also that whole question, what is the meaning of this Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom as far as this issue of divorce? Does the Torah essentially have this existing value that the husband should not be divorcing his wife casually or against her will, and therefore all of this contributes to this picture? Okay, where did I push up for Akiva? I think I...
I can't place exactly where I've seen this, but in some of the marriage it does appear that there is such a thing as a marriage that expires after a certain amount of So how would that fit into this scheme? Because that would appear to be a marriage that, since it expires and since you don't have to pay to dissolve it, it would sort of subvert the point of the two.
So that is a good question in general. Without addressing that specific case, just to allude to the general issue, and this we may have to come back to it tomorrow, but in general, it's a question, maybe I'll give you some more of a bonus method, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit tomorrow. I wasn't sure whether to pursue this point a little bit, but there is a question, forget about the Ksuba as a whole, but what about the general obligations and the Torah obligations, the ones that clearly are in the Torah, which share Ksuba's role. I shouldn't say clearly, involved. But it seems like from the Torah that there are basic obligations from the husband to the wife, right, to share Ksuba Ona, which let's assume means clothing and food and a physical relationship. So what happens if the husband decides, not just by himself, but he states this at the initial moment of Kiddushin, that I want to marry you and I want a condition that there's not going to be any such obligation, that I'm not going to have to provide all these things. So how exactly does that work? Is that possible? And if it is possible, what does it do about the Kiddushin itself? And how does it play into the fact that if we say that all of these rights are part of the whole package of marriage and part of the whole obligation of fleshing out this commitment, so it should be serious. So is it possible, should it be possible for a person to opt out of this? Again, can't opt out of it after he's married. Can you make a marriage on the condition that this should not be your obligation? Is there such a thing as a marriage under those terms? I think that's all connected to what you're asking. It's a little bit of a longer discussion, and probably maybe we'll say a few words about it tomorrow, so we only have a few more minutes now. But, so, the one major question that we now want to turn to is if we say that there is a chiyuv of ksuba, and that chiyuv of ksuba is so that it should not be talah ve'eina v'chotzia, so then Chazal at least made this institution, and that creates a prohibition of being with her without the ksuba. So let's talk for a few minutes about the nature of that Isser. So that Isser, it's not clear from the Gemara exactly what the Isser is. How does the Gemara at least two ways talks about there being some type of Isser. What kind of language would you find in the Gemara about the Isser being anything without Ksuba? What type of language do you find? So one phrase is Nus, right? It sounds like from the Gemara that a man who's with his wife without Ksuba that is a pilas nus, which is a strong statement, right? He's basically saying that it's ki'ilu, at least in the Rabbanan, it's ki'ilu, this is a out-of-marriage relationship, this is a wanton, promiscuous relationship, and that failing to fulfill this requirement of ksuba deformalizes their relationship to such an extent that the physical act is essentially an act of snus. So that's one statement you find in Gemara. What else do you find? Gemara also says that it's usher to do what? Right, it's machlokas in Gemara what the final statement is, but the way it's generally understood, it's usher to be mishaheh, right? It's usher to, so to speak, exist, basically. In marriage, the way we assume afilu sha'achas, right? To be married at all, without exuva, or to live together without exuva. So what exactly does that constitute, practically speaking? What is it that it's also to do without exuva? So this is actually a big machlokes. If you saw some Marmukomos, Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, right, what does the Shulchan Aruch understand as the Yisr? The Yisr is Yichud. So the Yisr is Bia, rather. Right? No, it's backwards. The Yisr is Yichud, right? That the Shulchan Aruch understands an Yisr of Yichud without Ksuba. And then the Ramah says a little bit more, well, maybe it's not the Yichud per se, but it's actually the Bia. And in the later Svarim, there was a Machlokas about this. There is a important work of Shilas and Shuvitz, written by Dayan from Tel Aviv. Passed away a few decades ago. Ehrenberg, Nachum Yeshua Ehrenberg, of the truth is Dvari Yehoshua. So he has a machlokas with the Satmar Rav. Of course, the Satmar Rav said that the Yisr is only Bia. It's an Yisr to have a physical relationship without the Ksuba. And the Dvari Yehoshua thought it was more than that. He thought that even without Yichud, there is a problem. There's a problem to enter into Kishrei Yishus, to enter into any definition of marriage without the ksuba. And this essentially builds on the machlokas we just mentioned in the Mechaber on the Ramah, that the Ramah focusing specifically on Bia, and the Shulchan Aruch going even further and saying that even Yichud is prohibited. So there are a number of questions that emerge from this. And basically, what is the purpose of the ksuba? Is the ksuba that the bia should be with a certain amount of protection for the wife, and therefore that's all we're really interested in? So as long as there's no bia, there's no chiyuv for ksuba. But a bia without ksuba is bilas nus. Or is it more than that? Is it that basically if you're taking a woman as a wife, so that comes with responsibilities, and the responsibility includes the ksuba, at least midrabanan, and that to fail to have the ksuba, there is something fundamentally missing, and that that's already a prohibition. And yichud is a little confusing, because yichud comes in the middle. It really could be either one. You could say that yichud, even without bia, represents a certain level of household, and therefore that should be answered by itself. Or it could be that, no, yichud in general is usually a problem, because there is a possibility of bia. So maybe really the issur is about bia, but if we prohibit bia, so then we should prohibit yichud also. Follow the question? Now what, if there's an issur yichud without ksuba, what does that mean? Is that independently? Or is that because really it's all about an issur bia, yichud is there or there's an issur bia?
I get back to the idea of like it's either shiag or
a little bit, yeah. Or, you know, are we focused on the bia problem, or are we focused on just that this is what marriage means, and marriage without the ksuba is wrong on any level? So this also is relevant, because to say that, well, if it's an issur bia, it's automatically an issur yichud anyway, that's actually not always true. Right? When is it usually not true? Normally, sorry? I didn't hear?
What do you ask?
A family, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually also true. I mean, family in general, depending on the nature of the family, that could be true as well. True, not what I was looking for. But actually, more relevant here is that really, usually, a husband and wife don't have a prohibition of yichud when nida is operative.
So that is an Issa Kares. That's more than the Issa Drabanan of not having a Ksuba. And still, we don't prohibit Yichud. Now, we don't prohibit Yichud because the assumption is that husband and wife, there's so much time heter, so they're not going to feel that it's uncontrollable to be alone together during the time of Issa. It's not like otherwise a married couple who, if they find themselves alone, they may feel, okay, here's an opportunity they can't pass up, and they're going to feel overtaken. So a husband and wife, we assume they're not going to feel like that because they'll feel, okay, why should they commit to Severa now? They'll wait a few days, a few weeks, and it'll be mutter. So it's not normally the case that a married couple has an Issa Yichud. Now hold on a second, you'll say, wait a minute. Well, it is sometimes the case that if you have a couple that's never had relations yet, they just got married. So then we actually do prohibit Yichud between the husband and wife. We assume the Yitzhahara is strong then. And that's one of the main concerns. We'll have to probably get into this more tomorrow with Chuppas Nida, that if the couple gets married, how is the Nida then? So it creates a lot of great logistic difficulties because there is an Issa Yichud. Even though the couple, the rest of their married lives, will not have an Issa Yichud during the time of Nida, but if they've never been together before, so then there is an Issa Yichud. So you might say, right, so it's the same thing. So a Kala without a Ksuba and a Kala who's a Nida, there's an Issa Yichud because of the concern of Bia. But, hold on a second. What if we're not talking about that? What if we're talking about in the middle of the marriage? The Ksuba gets lost in the middle of the marriage. So now she has no Ksuba. So we're back to a situation of Kala below Ksuba. So should there be an Issa Yichud then? On the one hand, you could say, if they're just concerned about Bia, so we don't make them have an Issa Yichud during a time of Nida. So maybe we should say that also. A couple in the middle of their marriage are losing the Ksuba, so maybe they have an Issa Bia, but they shouldn't have an Issa Yichud. Or should we say, no, that it's not just the Bia that's the problem. It's the Yichud itself is a problem. But that reflection of living together, that keeping the wife in his household without this protection, that itself is the issue.
How, I'm just asking a question on the issue, the fact that the husband might not have an issue with her when she's a Nida, but wouldn't the, the Mesula also have a Chazaka being a Nida?
Chazaka being a Nida, how does that play in? I mean, if she'd be part of the Mikvah.
Yeah.
But no, generally not, because the Kala normally goes to the Mikvah before the wedding.
I'm not even saying Chuppas Nida, I'm saying in general.
In general, Issa Yichud between unmarried people?
Yeah.
So
wouldn't it be this? It wouldn't be a similar like concern? I mean, not concern, a similar like, oh, this is like a pretty.
Well, normally, if you had an unmarried couple, but let's say you have a married couple that goes to all the other details of the wedding, you just have to not have a super.
Right.
So then she probably will.
No, I'm saying from before that. I'm not saying, not even saying from the middle of the marriage part. I'm saying before we were talking about when.
I mean, should an unmarried couple have an issue with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, should it?
Can you give me... We could... Yeah, do we... Wait one second. Sorry. We don't say it's the same thing that they're just too afraid that, you know, oh, she's, you know, she's going to be that, so, like, or she might be, so, like, we don't... You know, so we're going to stay away from that.
You said practically we don't need an issue with it because of that? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
No,
yeah, I don't think that's silly, but...
No, we do assume there is an Issa Yichud. It's interesting, the degree to which fear plays a role here. It's an interesting question. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, and I can't keep things late on Tuesday because it's class afterwards. Quickly review. By the way, there's extra marmakomas that were out this morning. Did anyone finish all those? Okay, so tomorrow, God willing, we'll finish up this topic, and we'll hopefully have enough makaras, whether we add some more or not, to flesh it out. Just to quickly review what we spoke about, and then we'll have to continue tomorrow. So essentially, we spoke about the fact that Chazal, Gemara tells us a number of places, the institution of Ksuba is Shalom Tei Kala Lahosia. And we discussed, what does that mean? Is that some type of a siyag? Is that an Isser Derabanan to protect the Isser Daraisa? That the Isser of Kadesha, and therefore this is too close to Kadesha, so the Chazal say, don't be with her without Ksuba so that you shouldn't be close to that Isser? Or is this more of a social corrective type of Derabanan that we don't want women to be divorced casually, and therefore Chazal put this in, and we can see it as a mitzvah saseh, also a social institution that there should be a positive concept of a ksuba. Just as in general, the fact of a cheirin
that there is a question whether the cheirim reflects the fact that there is a pre-existing iser being reinforced, or does it somehow imply that there are no pre-existing iser? I mentioned various other examples like intellectual property issues and lashon hara l'mason and the like, and therefore the question of cheirim or ben gershom on divorcing the wife against her will. Does that reflect the fact that Torah always prohibited that, or is that a new concept which she is essentially now making a part of halacha? And then we talked about the fact that you have an issur of shivui below kedusha on the one, the bel ksuah rather. On the one hand, the Gemara also used the phrase bilas nus, and on the other hand, you also find this issur to exist, so to speak, to maintain one's wife without ksuva. So we started to discuss the question: what is that issur practically? What is that issur? Is the issur the Ramah says it's really only about Bia, the Shulchan Aruch says Yichud, and later Sfarim, Sadarat said it was only about Bia, and Bar Yeshua argued even to enter into Kishrei Ishus without Yichud is already a problem. And then we pose the question also, if we say there is an Issa Yichud, it really could be understood in either direction. It could be Yichud is independently problematic because it represents marriage, or it could be, no, the Yichud is just there because there's an Issa Bia, so when you have an Issa Bia, you have an Issa Yichud. We saw that actually a married couple often has an Issur Bia without an Issur Yichud, as long as it's the middle of the marriage, not the beginning of the marriage. That's exactly the case here also. You could lose the ksuba, and then the question could be, if there's an Issur now, is it just an Issur Bia? And if there is, maybe it doesn't have to bring with it an Issur Yichud. So how exactly does all that play out? So, God willing, we will finish that tomorrow with my guest this time. So if any Na'amanus left is that we will actually finish that question tomorrow. God willing. Have a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And,